Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk.
Podcast number 19. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And this is Mike Calvo, 19.
On the 20th. Yes. Yeah, 19. I like that song.
Remember that song?
Paul Hardcastle, 1985.
It's lazy summertime.
Lazy summertime. Yeah, July's kind of a kickback time. People vacationing, doing other things, maybe ramping up. More announcements as we get into the early fall.
Oh, speaking of falling, we had a great time over the summer.
Oh, yeah, man. Calvo decided he would show me his pool, but he thought he would not wait until I got into my swimsuit, but show me fully clothed and shoes and electronics and everything else.
Truly would have been one of the most awesome YouTube moments that you have ever seen in your life. Michael had come to my house. I live here in Orlando where the ACB conference was, and Michael and I were working the conference. So after, of course, hey, man, come on over, you know, this and that. So I'm showing him my pool. We have a child fence, and it comes real close to the edge of the child fence because, of course, you have to have room in the backyard, you know, for the pool.
As in walk sideways close.
Yes, but I neglected to tell him to walk sideways. So he's walking straight. And Michael's a tall dude. I'm 5 foot seven and a half, 5 foot eight on a good day. Michael is what, 6'1"?
6'1".
My pool is 6 feet deep. So we're walking along the edge of the pool, and Michael is doing the right thing. He's walking, and he's trailing with his cane. But, you know, we're just talking and carrying on. And all of a sudden, Michael just drops.
One leg goes over. I quickly think, I'm going in the pool now. Stay calm. My son's a skateboarder. He told me all these things about how to properly fall. Don't tense up. That's just going to hurt yourself.
And it's true. He was quite relaxed. He just kind of dropped in. He's like, oh, I fell in the pool. I said, oh, man, let's get you out. He goes, and my iPhone's in my pocket. It's like, no!
Oh, man.
Oh, it sucked. He got out of the pool very quickly. The iPhone is fine.
No, the iPhone is good. The Mophie battery pack's good. What we did lose was, let's just say Tech Chat 24 was the last podcast you will hear from the infamous Zoom H2. It did not weather well. It's cheap plastic. Got the best of it.
So what did you get to replace it?
I got a Sony PCMD50, which is not a cheap recorder. It's in the $500 range, so I trust I'll be going out and doing some quality interviews with that device. And also, I use it as secondary backup when I record the tech chats and other things that we do here.
Very cool.
So anyone who wants to schedule interviews poolside with Mr. Locke, I'm sure he'll be happy to oblige.
Not poolside. Not
poolside.
And the really sad thing, folks, is that there was absolutely no alcohol involved in this blink blunder, but it was hilarious. And I would have loved to have been able to videotape that just because I thought it was just so hilarious because he walked into the pool with such grace.
Yeah, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, man, just get out of my way. I'm hopping out of here as quick as I can.
Yeah,
don't worry about me. I'm freaking about my iPhone.
I was like kind of holding him doing, you know, the go this way or whatever thing. And when he fell in, I didn't let him go. And thank God he didn't reach up and grab me because I also had my iPhone in my pocket. That would have been quite nasty.
If there's a next time, Mr. Loft, do it. Reach up and grab him.
Yeah. Gee, thanks. With friends like you.
If I was a good pickpocket, I'd remove the phone from his pocket and then throw him in right in the middle. Then he's groping around for his iPhone, which isn't there.
We had a good time at the conventions. I found, actually, this year the hotel was pretty navigable here in Orlando.
The only downside was the bandwidth. Their provider was not very good.
Yeah, they did have crappy internet. And then not to mention the horrible cost that they wanted to put on exhibitors. The same $9.95 internet that they're selling to everybody else for $9.95, which wasn't even worth that. They had the audacity to want to charge us $300 a day for, to which we said, not! And we brought our own Sprint Air card. And we used our own, and as you used your own Verizon card in Michigan. How was the Michigan?
I did. The Michigan experience itself, being in Detroit, meeting lots of new people, hanging out with Brian and Mike Calvo II, being able to meet so many people in person was wonderful. But the hotel, or should I say the Circle of Doom, is not a place that I want to visit anytime soon. I would say it was a blind person's nightmare, but this was definitely not just restricted to blind people in terms of being able to navigate this hotel and the Renaissance complex. I happened to be in a different hotel, that being the Courtyard, which is conveniently connected to the Renaissance via a wonderful, lovely skyway. To find this skyway, you must navigate your way around a circle, which has sort of random openings along it, and judge which of these openings, which all appear pretty much exactly the same, which of these you should exit in order to find your way to the skyway and back to the other hotel. And not only that, you had to go up a level from the courtyard to get to this place. Then you arrive in the Renaissance Center, where you must then find another escalator to go up another level to get to where you're actually going. And it was interesting asking even sighted people for directions. Even people who worked at the hotel said, I didn't know this thing was here, and I've worked here for 6 years, and I kid you not. Every day was an adventure getting from where I was to the exhibit hall and back again.
How was it with the dog versus the stick?
This was Eddie's first real convention, and he wanted to go sniff and say hi to the other dogs. It was interesting because the Circle of Doom was just as confusing for him and all the other guide dogs as it was for guide dog users and cane users. And so it was not an uncommon occurrence to see people sort of wandering around. And I think this has been stated before, where it seems that a group of blind people can get directions more successfully, sort of help each other out along the way and be a little more successful in navigating a place like this than a blind person alone would be. So again, it was not uncommon to see a group of people sort of wandering around and going, oh yeah, I just passed that and that's where you need to go. So you turn around and do this and we'll continue to do that. You know, there was a lot of camaraderie and people sort of getting lost together. And that was just part of the Detroit experience from what I was able to gather, not just for me, but for a lot of people, was getting lost. Aside from the Circle of Doom, which again, I hope never to visit again, the conference itself was great. I'm looking forward to NFB next year in Dallas, where things are laid out quite nicely, and it's a great place to visit deep in the heart of Texas.
Have a great steak.
Yeah.
And everything's bigger in Texas.
Bigger.
We had fun in Texas. And one of the years NFB was at that horrible hotel in Atlanta, which is continuously under construction. It was the Marriott, I think. It just seems that sometimes either one of the organizations says, well, let's test the mobility skills. It is quite funny, and especially when you see a pack of blind people all wielding long canes, and you hear the swish of the canes going, you're like, no! And they're all coming towards you in a big cloud. And you're,
yes, and they're echoing in a big open atrium. It's quite an interesting sound effect.
Yeah, we got to record it one year. We had great sales at the conferences this year. A lot of people picked up on our netbooks. I'm going to go ahead and cover something about the netbooks that some people actually got a little frustrated because we were selling refurbished netbooks this year. Quite frankly, folks, refurbished in many respects is better than actually new sometimes. A product comes off of an assembly line in multiples, and when it gets off that, it's put in a box and that's it. Sometimes quality assurance is glanced by, but they don't have the opportunity to burn machines and test them and all that. And when you get a refurbished machine, especially like the Winds that we were selling this year, which we gave a 1 year warranty on instead of the usual refurbished 90 day warranties, it's definitely better to buy refurbished in that case. First of all, you save the money. And second of all, you get the same kind of warranty. So when you're going to buy refurbished, don't be concerned about buying refurbished electronics, people. As long as there's a good warranty behind them, sometimes you can even buy extended warranties that will take it longer out than a year. And these warranties, instead of just giving you a new product or whatever, they just pay you back for the investment that you made. So for example, you can go buy a $300 or $400 laptop that would have normally cost you $800 or $900, but buy it refurbished for that. And then you get a warranty that says, hey, if it dies in a year, we'll just give you your $400 back. And that's a pretty fair deal. I mean, considering the fact that we like to renew our toys every once in a while anyway. Definitely was a netbook year. At $399, including the screen reader, a lot of folks got a great deal. So,
and you really can't beat that.
No,
$400 for a talking, fully functional, nice PC that does everything a note taker does and then some. Why wouldn't you want that?
Well, I see that Humanware is giving away 4 BlackBerries, and we put a link in a socializer, and at least 10 people have told me they are registering for that. So if you're wigging out about a touchscreen and want a kind of a combo QWERTY keyboard and touchscreen, whenever it's available, but they're going to draw for those on July 31st. So if you want a BlackBerry or a chance to win it, that's good marketing on their part. I'm sure they'll build quite an extensive list of potential customers.
Presenting the 4 BlackBerries.
Yeah, I feel like I should be singing a little barbershop quartet type thing, the 4 BlackBerries. But there was quite a bit of BlackBerry buzz at this year's conventions along with the BookSense. I think this year's conventions were really kind of focused on hardware, netbooks, BlackBerries, BookSenses.
The 4 BlackBerries debut album is going to be called BlackBerry Jam.
But you mentioned the BookSense. I thought it was interesting. A lot of people who already own Victor's are buying the BookSense just because it has the Kate and Paul voices, and they just can't stand to read text with Samantha. I find it interesting that they'll make that much of an investment.
Even after listening to Samantha on the iPhone, where she does sound a bit better, she's still not palatable for me on the Victor. And I have been fairly tempted to get a BookSense as well for exactly that reason. And I think that the BookSense has some other great things going for it. It's sleek and stylish looking. It has a stereo mic input. So there are definitely reasons, I suppose, that a person might have both because they each have their things that they do well. My reason for considering it was just that it had Kate and Paul and not Samantha.
Of course, sleek and stylish depends on who you show it to. I mean, if you show it to a sighted person and they go, hey, where's the screen? Oh, yeah, that's nice. Being patronizing, I don't want to tell you that, dude, I don't get it. I would never have one. There's no screen. I can't use it.
I would have to side with Michael there. As I see the line between blind products and the mainstream products kind of narrowing, I say what I'm about to say with the utmost of respect for GW Micro. As a blind consumer, I think that the Victor folks hit the nail on the head. It was a good price point. It was the first one of its kind. It did a great thing for opening up that possibility. I don't know if the BookSense is going to be as successful, especially considering the fact that you've got this new Plex Talk thing coming up soon. How much room is there for these basically blind market only MP3 players and book readers? The NLS is only going to serve a certain amount of these people. I just think that we're going to see BlackBerries, even Symbian and Pocket PC, all of these different mainstream devices that are going to have software that will be able to do the blind type of things very soon. I kind of wonder about the smarts of going out and spending $400 or $500 on one of these devices. That's not to mean that the product isn't solid. I've heard the demos. I've put my hands on the product. It is a solid product. The company behind it is a solid company. GW Micro is a great company, and they always stand behind their product. So I'm sure that you're not paying $500 for something that really should be $200. But at the end of the day, it's $500 because it's being sold to a smaller market when you could possibly get a lot of the same bang for your buck out of a mainstream product that you're able to take advantage of its wider appeal to the wider audience. So for me, the jury's still out on should these products even be something that AT companies are even looking at anymore? Or should we, as AT companies, look at building products or software packages more for these other platforms that are obviously emerging and trying to work their way into our market? And just to put up the possibility of, as AT companies, are we perpetuating the blind ghetto mentality? As a consumer, I would, if given the choice of buying this product versus either an iPhone or even an N82 or Windows smartphone or the new BlackBerry coming out with Orator on it, I'd wait. And that's just the way I feel about it as a consumer. That has nothing to do with me professionally or anything like that. It's just, where am I going to put my money? There's only so many products I can buy a year.
But some of these choices come down to, well, I can play NLS books on it. So we'll see if we have any mainstream companies to try to go and work with the NLS and come up with some deal to
Well, I remind you, the NLS standard, man, is an open standard. It is a standard that anybody can write a piece of software for any platform. I don't know why NLS is chosen only to work with this group. NLS has its own standalone player that I can get for a real good price, free, and then I can go use my consumer device of choice for everything else. If the only reason I'm spending $500 is to get NLS, if I'm going to spend $329 on a Victor or $499 or $300 and some odd on a BookSense, I could just as easily spend that on a really nice smartphone that I can do a lot of other cool stuff with and just get the free player from NLS. It's all about choice. It's just that we need to become more consumer oriented in these types of things as consumers and really vet the choices, you know, that we have available to us, because I think there are a lot now.
And that's the theme of this podcast, actually, is choices, because two reviews we're going to do today from Doug Hunsinger. He's going to compare speakers, the Foxell speakers and Altec Lansing, and he's going to compare two HD radios. So yes, those of you who've criticized us for telling you everything that's cool and you don't have enough money to afford it, we're giving you choices, and you'll have to decide which of the two products in that given market is best for what you want to do.
I actually got to play with the Foxell speakers myself, and we were going to do our own review of them, and we heard Doug's, and it was just such a good review that we just said, well, let's let Doug say it. But my two cents is I thought the speakers were great. The Bluetooth connectivity sucks, but I think a lot of Bluetooth connectivity sucks. I don't think that's a reflection of Foxell. I think it was just the standard that they used in those speakers. The cool thing about it, of course, is that through Bluetooth, though, when you're using it just as a speakerphone or a conference phone for your cell phone, it did work very well, although it tended to drain the battery a lot quicker. Again, as Bluetooth does, the speakers are very solidly built. They fit great into a bag. I like them a lot. When you run them on battery, they only go so loud. And then when you plug them in, they go even louder. And the product is very solidly built. You can tell that there's a lot of engineering in those speakers. So it's a very cool product. The price point isn't bad. Check out the reviews and make your own decision. But I like them. So you'll see them coming up in shows in the near future.
Speaking of something you may see coming up in a show in the future, hopefully as early as 2010, Accessible Devices just did an interview about a new product coming out called the BrainPort. It's a large cell phone in terms of its size and shape, and you basically connect a little device to your tongue, and it sends electrodes to your tongue, which essentially, well, you wear this pair of glasses, but essentially your tongue is a direct portal to the visual cortex of your brain.
Wait. So you have this thing connected to your tongue, and then you have a thing that's the size of a cell phone that I would imagine you hold close to your ear, right?
No, I think you can put it in your pocket. It's just a device.
Yeah, it's just the receiver or the transmitter.
The electronics of it. But you're wearing a pair of glasses.
And you have glasses?
Yeah, you're wearing with the camera built in kind of around the bridge of your nose or something that's actually taking a picture of what's in front of you.
Wow,
the guys talk about reading letters on signs and being able to find empty chairs. And this one was kind of weird. He was talking about putting some kind of infrared detection on it so he could basically put something on his wife and tag her, find her within a group. Do you think your spouses would like that? Here, babe, wear this little infrared lapel and I'll be able to hone in on you.
If they make it into really pretty earrings, yeah, I think people would go for that. But what a really Gibsonian or cyberpunk science fiction type thing to have happen. And this is
That's actually just weird.
I got to say, I'm pretty fascinated by it. Now, do I really want to have a sort of a strange looking get up when I go out in public just to make this thing work? Not necessarily, but I am very fascinated by what kind of information you could learn to perceive using technology like this.
I've got a design suggestion. I know what they could do. They could like make the tongue part into a tongue ring and make it Bluetooth wireless.
They are working on wireless.
Stick your tongue out.
Yeah, they are working on the wireless model. That's one thing they really want to do. They may not be able to achieve that before they release it. I mean, they may decide to release without having that ability. Ultimately, they want that wireless capability so that it's less obtrusive. And of course, if you turn up the stimulus on your tongue, of course, it makes you salivate a little more. So you're like, I know.
Excuse me, ma'am. Why is your tongue sticking out? Why are you drooling? Oh, I'm just looking around.
If it becomes Bluetooth, you can sync up to different devices. So as you wave your tongue, or if you hook it up to your Mac or your iPhone, you can flick left and right and up and down all kinds of
stuff. Is there a reason you have your tongue out? Yeah, I'm looking for my wife.
I'm into it. I like it.
I don't see myself dropping the 5G for it, but I am open. I certainly will. If they have it at a convention, I will test it out. I'll record it with my new Sony PCMD50.
How do multiple people?
They use alcohol and, you know, you have different electrodes.
Yeah, drop it into a vat of boiling something.
Somebody told me about the eye implants, how, you know, this guy feels all kinds of freedom wearing these eye implants. Oh, all you got to do is wear a belt pack. Wear a belt pack for your eyes? Oh, yeah, we're not going to stick out at all. Sorry, but no. I mean,
that one I couldn't get into. That was the William Dobell, right? The one that we got to turn down the voltage. People are having seizures.
Dude, forget it. Leave me blind, for heaven's sakes. Deal with it, people. You're blind.
It's not so much about I am afflicted with blindness and I will do anything and I will wear any strange costumery just in order to be able to perceive the world around me. To me, it's just a fascinating technological innovation that I would like to see. Now, whether I used it every day or not, really anything like this is more information is better.
Well, it's being touted as a mobility aid, so what if this could replace the use of a dog at some point?
I'm sorry, man. It's just so bizarre, the thought of waving your tongue around.
No, you don't, dude. You're not waving your tongue around. Your tongue is in your mouth. You're just getting electrical impulse. Kind of like if you ever, I think every kid did this, or we did anyway, where you put the 9-volt battery on your tongue, you know, and you feel a little, yeah, the battery's still good.
Yep.
Is that what it does? But that's even crazier.
Oh, now he's into it.
No, that's like even nutsier.
You can adjust the intensity like an Opticon, but it's the same concept. Anyone who's ever used an Opticon where you feel a printed letter on your finger, imagine that shape. I'm intrigued with it. So you're not going to try it. You're not going to test it out. I can't record you.
You're
not going to do it. You don't care.
No. Won't be doing the tongue thing. But yeah, you guys can tell me all about it.
There. Absolutely. I will I will subject my tongue to that.
Excuse me. Don't you remember me? Hold on a second. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you. Really?
You could touch the touchscreens with your tongue. Yeah, that's it.
I'm just reading my windows and thaw.
This one's going to offend and be humorous all at the same time.
This is Doug Hunsinger in Baltimore, Maryland, and I want to talk with you today about two speaker systems that you might want to consider as options for operating your phone via Bluetooth. You can use these speaker systems as a hand-free phone device, or you can stream audio through them. And the speaker systems are the Altec Lansing InMotion Soundblade System and the SoundBanners Foxel MB. That's M as in Mike, B as in Bravo, and Foxel is written F-O-X-L. The price for these two systems, the Foxel MB, which contains Bluetooth, is $249. And Amazon.com sells the Altec Lansing InMotion Soundblade system for $129. And I have seen it cheaper elsewhere. Let me first describe a couple of things about both of these speaker systems. The size. If you want portability, the Foxel is the way to go. The Foxel can fit into your pocket. That's how small it is. And what I'm going to first do is describe it. As the speakers face you, the left and right-hand side contains a little hole that you can attach a little hand carry strap to. On the front of the speakers, you have the left speaker, the right speaker, and in the middle, a little button. When you hold that button in, it tries to connect to your Bluetooth device. And what I've done is I've paired my cell phone with both devices, so when I connect them, you can hear what that sounds like. On the back of the speaker system, you have a little stand that folds out. And when you fold this stand out, behind it, you'll feel a little rubberized thing that bounces up and down. And that's your rechargeable battery / subwoofer. Now, if you turn the speakers around so the back is facing you, on the left-hand side on the bottom is a little on-off button that's a slide switch. You slide it to the left and to the right, and you can hear the speakers pop on when you turn them on, I think. Let's turn it off. On the right-hand side of the door are two little buttons, top and bottom. The bottom button is volume down, and the top button is volume up. Let's turn the speakers back around so that they face you. On the left-hand side of the speakers, you have a jack, which is your line in jack. That's for your source. You can hook an audio source to them with a patch cord. And below that is a power supply for charging the system. On the right-hand side of the speakers is a jack to connect a subwoofer to. So you could run these speakers with a subwoofer. Below that jack is a USB port, and that USB port is for charging batteries only. When you first buy the speakers, the manufacturer tells you to charge the batteries for 4 hours. Subsequently, the batteries take 2 hours to charge, and can last up to 5 hours. Let's describe briefly the Altec Lansing InMotion Soundblade system. The Soundblade system is quite a bit larger. It's about twice as wide and about twice as long and about as fat. I'm not good with descriptions, but definitely you wouldn't put these in your pocket, but they are a flat system that would pack easily in a suitcase. What you have is on the front, there are no buttons as the speakers face you, but on the top, the system has a light and 7 buttons on them. The left button is your power on button, and the other buttons do different things when the system is connected as a Bluetooth device, and I won't go into all those, but the right two are your volume up and volume down buttons. On the back of the unit, you have a little push button that opens a door. All right, you just heard the door open, and that's your little speaker stand. And underneath the speaker stand are 2 jacks, one for your wired source, if you want to connect an iPod or something to it. It comes with a patch cord to do that, and it's an 1/8-inch plug. And next to that is your power source for plugging the unit in. This device does not take rechargeable batteries unless you decide to put them in, but it doesn't recharge them. It takes 6 AA batteries, and the manufacturer claims that a set of 6 AA batteries will last up to 20 hours. There are 2 compartments on the back of the unit. Each compartment holds 3 AA batteries. Let's briefly talk about performance. With these 2 units, the Fox L actually sounds better, even though the size is quite a bit smaller. But there is a little bit of a disadvantage to the Fox L. With the Fox L system, none of the cell phone's buttons or controls are accessible through the speaker system itself. You can't push redial or any of the other functions of the phone through the speakers. You have to use your cell phone to do those functions. With the Soundblade system, you can push buttons on this thing when it's connected via Bluetooth, and it will redial the last person you called. It will activate voice command. There's several things that you can do with the push buttons on the top of the Altec Lansing speakers. Let me show you a disadvantage of the Fox L. The disadvantage of it is connecting it via Bluetooth. Now, I recorded a demonstration of connecting that earlier to show you a problem that it has, and here's that recording. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn the Fox L speakers on, and then I'm going to set the microphone down on them, and we're going to try to push the button and connect them so you can hear what it sounds like. Now, notice that I have to disconnect and reconnect it to make it sound worth anything, so listen up. There's the connect tone. Here it comes. All right, hear how little that sounds? All right, now I'm ready to reconnect them. I'm going to do this real quickly. All right, I disconnected. Now I'm going to reconnect them. Here goes. What you heard in that demonstration was my cell phone streaming audio from the Legend, and then the microphone recording the speakers as they were being played. When you connect the Fox L's via Bluetooth to a netbook or other computer, you don't have that problem. When they connect correctly the first time they connect. So you don't have to disconnect and reconnect them. The audio sounds good when it connects. I'm going to show you how easy it is to hook up the Altec Lansing InMotion sound system. Okay, what you're hearing in the background, I'm recording this on the same microphone that I did the original start of the podcast on, so you're not going to hear the stereo effect. But what I've got is I've got my cell phone sitting here with Bluetooth turned on. I'm going to turn on the Altec Lansing speakers and let you hear them connect. Power button held on. Here it comes. Thank you. right. They're connected. Now, what I'm going to show you in the next demo is I'm going to show you a demo of both products through the same microphone, so you'll get some ideas to what they sound like. First, the Altex.
Remember, when you want the very best, it's the legend. For hours a day.
Here's the Fox L speakers. Those Fox L's really do have that much added extra bass for the size. They're very compact in size, and when they're plugged in, the manufacturer claims that they have 4 watts of output power, a little bit less on battery, but still very adequate for filling up a small room. I want to quickly comment on how these speakers do when taking cell phone calls. The audio quality of the Altec Lansings when listening to someone's phone call is quite good. On the other hand, the Fox L's do make a little bit of racket, and they have that tinny sound that you heard when the system first connected. That's how they sound when you hear the caller phone in and talk with you. Now, the microphones on both of these vary a little bit in quality, too. The Altec Lansing sounds a little bit muffled, and the Fox L's have a bit brighter and better high-end as a microphone for transmitting your audio back to the caller. And that's my review of these two speaker systems, the Altec Lansing InMotion Soundblade and the Sound Matters Fox L MB speaker systems. Thanks for listening.
Well, we wanted to follow up. We briefly mentioned during the ACB convention the MSI Windtop and how cool of a machine I thought it was. So I thought we'd catch up with Mike Calvo, who has his in his kitchen, getting everyday use out of it.
It's the AE1900, and really it's a great machine for the kitchen type of scenario or for a family that like has a need for a centralized computer, somebody who lives in an apartment and really wants to have a computer that is used for content consumption. We've talked about content creation versus consumption in the past. Again, creation is for those of us who are a little more professional that are editing stuff and doing large amounts of converting of files or doing lots of video editing and that kind of stuff. This machine wouldn't be good for that. What this machine is great for is surfing the internet, watching video on YouTube. Even it's got a built-in DVD player and burner that you can use to actually create DVDs and things like that. It comes with Vista Home Basic out of the box. This particular version that I'm running right now, because we are a Microsoft partner, I'm running Windows 7. I wanted to talk for a minute about the processor, Michael, because I think that there's some confusion even amongst the reviewers that I've read online. This is actually using the Atom 330 dual-core Atom processor, which runs at 1.66, just like the netbook, but it's like having two of them. I'm actually running a 64-bit edition of Windows on here. The machine has 4 gigs of RAM and a 250-gig hard drive, so it is a pretty gutsy little machine as far as storage goes and everything. And as you hear, I'm using on Skype right now, I'm using the built-in camera and mic that's right on the screen. It's a one-piece, it's an 18.5-inch screen. And it's a touch screen, and currently we don't use the touch screen, But as technology evolves, I think that you'll see more and more blind folks using touch screens in the future. I know that that's a very weird thing for people to think about, but trust me when I tell you it makes natural sense, a lot more natural sense in some cases than a blind person using a mouse to the best of our ability. So I'm in my kitchen, and normally the way that this machine would be used is I would come to the kitchen, and if I needed to, for example, if I wanted to go to Facebook, I would come here.
Run, type the name of a program, folder, document, or internet resource, and Windows will open it for you. Open, add a combo box.
And I can go to Facebook, and I'm just going to Facebook through Internet Explorer. I'm not going through the mobile network.
Windows Internet Explorer, connecting.
There's our little seesaw sound.
Go to Facebook Home, check box, not check, remember me, forget your password, editable text. Link, forgot your password, login button.
I can use the NetTop to basically do whatever it is I need to do, and then when I'm done, just kind of walk away. This is the machine that everybody in the family tends to use. My daughter uses it a lot for looking at her Facebook account and just looking at videos on YouTube or whatever. My 9-year-old walks by, and if he wants to show us something, he just walks up to the machine and just types it in. It sounds really clean, and as I'm here and I'm maintaining a conversation with you, I can move around my kitchen. How do I sound right now?
You sound good.
So what I'm doing is I'm getting a glass out of the dishwasher, coming over here to my refrigerator, I'm getting some water.
The point being, for listeners who may not get it, is that you could carry on a conversation. You could be cooking a meal. Now, if you turned on a blender or some appliance, it might interfere, but essentially you could do work while engaging in a conversation on Skype.
Now I'm over here by my stove, and this is a ways away. I don't have a small kitchen. I mean, I don't live in a mansion, but right now I'm right up on top of the machine. I'm probably about 7 or 8 inches away, and as I'm moving away, now I'm about 3 feet away. Now I'm about 4.5, 5 feet away, maybe 6 feet away from the screen, and I'm at my stove. I'm able to do what I need to do, and you're still able to hear me, I would assume.
Yes, we can still hear you.
It's a nice little machine, and basically it's $799, which is what we sell it for, including the screen reader, I may add. It really is not a bad entry-level machine. It's got the chutzpah to keep up pretty much with just about anything I've thrown at it so far. I can honestly say I have not seen this machine be slow. I have noticed from time to time that it does turn on the fan. I'll be here at night, and I'll walk by the machine, and it'll be humming away, you know, running the fan. You don't hear any fan noise, do you?
No, not at all. It's very quiet. I think this will be a great tool for partially sighted individuals who need screen enlargement, because you have that 18.1 or 0.5, whatever, inch display. So it's large enough that folks who need some magnification, I think, would really benefit from this unit.
Magnification is definitely something that would be very cool on this machine. It's a clear screen. It's a flat screen. It doesn't take up a whole heck of a lot of room. There really isn't much negative that I can say about it. Now, there are a couple of other options on the market. You've got your HP TouchSmart stuff, which the TouchSmarts tend to be a little more expensive. Granted, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because this unit has a dual-core Atom processor, which tends to be a lighter weight processor, more energy efficient, less gutsy, slower front-side bus, that kind of thing. And on these TouchSmarts from HP, and Sony has one as well, and I know that the folks at CyberNet have one as well. There's a few different types of these all-in-one PCs where the stuff is in the screen. They all tend to run over $1,200 or $1,300, though. So you're talking at $799, including the screen reader. So if you take away the $150 for the Atom edition of the screen reader, you're basically getting this machine for $650. If you look online, I've seen them as low as about $599. Folks, we're not the cheapest guys in town. We do got to make something for putting the screen reader in there and putting it in a box and sending it to you.
And offering the support.
And that's the other thing, is that we tend to not just throw things in a box and that's it. If you call us, we're going to know your machine and help you get it to where it needs to be. We're not going to go in there and configure everything for you, but we're certainly going to do a lot more for you than, say, a buy.com or Newegg or whatever. And those are great places to buy if you know what you're looking for, if you don't need support, you know, and if you're willing to deal with the possibility that you may have an RMA and you're not going to deal with people, you're going to deal with email, you know, for everything. And if that's cool, then by all means, I always look to Frugal and other places, Nextag, and whenever I'm shopping, and look for the best deal I can. This segment is not to sell you the AE1900. At Cerotech, we don't focus on hardware sales. We provide hardware because our customer wants a one-stop solution. Our main thing is software. That being said, though, we'll be happy to sell you one, but do look for some reviews. I think you're going to really enjoy it.
Yes, I was impressed with it. It has a very nice keyboard that comes with it, and it's all one-piece design. You put it right on your desktop or tabletop, or you have in the kitchen, set it on a counter, wherever, and it's going to meet most people's needs.
I like it. I think the keyboard and the mouse leave a little bit to be desired. I think the machine is a little plasticky. If that doesn't bother you, I tend to really like metal. But that also changes the weight. It also changes the cost of manufacturing. It's all what you like. I mean, I'm listening to you here on Skype, and you sound really good. You're clear. I get a slight stereo feel when I play music through it. It is by no means a hi-fi type of thing. But, hey, I could always put in a pair of USB speakers or something. It is 802.11n. It does provide the high-speed access. The thing that's very cool is just being able to have a kitchen computer that doesn't have a bunch of wires hanging out of it. It does take a little bit of sight to set the thing up because, of course, being that it's a touchscreen and all that, it wants you to calibrate it. When you get it from us, we set it up for you so it's easier to run and it starts talking out of the box.
Well, that's arguably worth the $50 itself if you don't have sighted assistance.
This is Doug Hunsinger in Baltimore, Maryland, and I want to talk with you today about two stereo component tuners, the Sangean HDT1 and the Sony XDR-F1HD. These are component tuners in that they don't have speakers, so you will need to hook these into your stereo system, or you could use powered speakers with the right patch cords and listen to AM, FM, and HD on AM or FM with both of these tuners. What I hope to do today is talk with you a little about each of these tuners, some of the features, and show you a little bit about how each performs on AM, FM, and HD on both AM and FM. Let's first talk about the Sangean HDT1, and I'll just call it the Sangean for short. This unit lists for about $199.95. Amazon.com sells it for around $168, but if you shop around, you can even do a little bit better than that. This tuner is quite large. It's a standard stereo component size device, weighs about 9 pounds when shipped. On the back of the tuner, it has a detachable power cord, which plugs into the unit. It has an F-type connector for FM and two neat little push-down clips for connecting your AM wire antenna. It also has two left and right output jacks on the back, and they're RCA jacks. It comes with a remote control. If you've seen the Bose Wave Radio's remote control, then the remote of the Sangean HDT1 is about that size. And the buttons are that membrane feeling kind of button, but they're very tactile and easy to use. On the front of the tuner, on the left-hand side is your power on and off button, a menu button, which allows you to go through several things like brightness and set up several parts of the tuner. I haven't messed with that because it's not very accessible. Your band selector switch, and it has two AM and two FM tuners. To the right of those buttons are three up and down slew keys. One tunes in 100 Hz steps for FM, 10 kilohertz steps for AM. The second one scans to your next strongest FM or AM station. And the third scans to your next strongest FM HD or AM HD station. So the tuning options on this unit are quite versatile. On the left-hand side of this tuner is a keypad. This keypad has numbers 1 through 0. On the left-hand side of the 0 is your memory set, and on the right-hand side is where you can press to enter frequencies. For example, when you're on FM, you would press frequency 1045, and it will take you to 104.5. Just as on AM, if you pressed frequency 910, it would take you to 910 kilohertz. As far as performance, this tuner does quite well on HD. In fact, it does much better than the Sony, so I'm not going to show you much of the Sony's HD. Before we talk about the Sony, let's show you some FM and some AM. First, the FM. I want you to hear some classical music recorded from 90.9 in Washington, D.C. You'll hear the tuner first start out with a noisy stereo signal and then switch into HD. Thank you. Yeah, you'll notice that once that HD signal kicks in, it certainly does get quiet. A couple of comments about HD radio in general, and then we're going to show you what HD sounds like with these tuners, specifically HD on the Sangean, since it does tend to do a bit better than the Sony with its HD performance. Some radio that broadcast HD 2 and 3 signals broadcast them in mono. For example, WIYY at 97.9 broadcast album-oriented rock on its main and HD1 channels, both in stereo. On its HD2, it's classic rock. HD3 is independent rock. And both HD2 and HD3 are broadcasted in not very good-sounding mono. Let's show you what a little bit of the stereo sounds like on HD. I'm going to show you some oldies, a little bit of country. Then we'll talk about the two receivers. I'm not going to show you much about the Sony's HD performance on FM, but I will describe the radio a little bit. And then we'll compare the two receivers, both on FM and AM. But let's listen to some music.
To leave you alone, you've got a heart like a stone and a wondering eye.
The Sangean HD T1 does quite nicely with HD, and I'll compare it with the Sony on FM and AM in just a little bit, but I want to touch quickly on another tuner that Sangean sells if you're considering buying a Sangean, and it's the Sangean HD T1X. This model is a bit newer than the HD T1, and it has the following features that the HD T1 doesn't have. The HD T1X allows you to force the unit to stay in FM mode or AM mode and not go to HD. The advantage to doing that is if you have a weak signal, it might go in and out between your standard AM, FM, and the HD signals. And that can be annoying, especially if a radio station programs a delay in its AM or FM to HD. And some do still. The other thing it has is stereo mono for FM. The HD T1 doesn't. It also has a digital output, which would allow you to record digitally from this tuner to another digital source. Finally, what you can do with this tuner is if you have your favorite FM station tuned in and it has HD, you could listen to the analog signal in one channel and the HD signal in the other. Not sure why you'd want to do this, but it is an option with the HD T1X. The list price for the HD T1X is $269.95 compared to $199.95 for the HD T1. Both units can be had for less money at discount stores such as Amazon or J&R Music World, etc. Finally, let's talk a little bit about the Sony XDR-F1HD. This is a little box-looking tuner. It's quite small, and it weighs about 3 pounds. The Sony on the back has an F-type FM antenna connector. It has two spring-loaded AM connectors so that you have to hold the springs in place to connect the AM antenna. It's a little bit harder to do than the Sangean. It has your two stereo out RCA jacks, and it has a power cord that doesn't attach. On the top of the unit, it has a lot of buttons, which will help you store memories, scan through memories, scan up and down on your AM and FM. And AM and FM tunes in small increments, as does the Sangean. On AM, it's every 10 kilohertz, and on FM, it's every 100 hertz. So 100.2, 100.3, 100.4. This unit does have a remote control, and it's quite larger than the Sangean's remote. It doesn't allow direct frequency entry like the Sanjian does, either with its remote control or with the tuner itself. But it does perform quite well, so what I want to do now is give you a comparison of these two tuners and how they are as DX machines. The list price of the Sony is much less than the Sanjian models that I've previously discussed. The Sony list price is $99.95, and you can buy it for less. Amazon has it for around $85, which includes shipping, and I'm sure if you shopped around that you could find it for comparable prices. So the Sony tuner doesn't have as many features as the Sanjian, but it does cost a lot less. Quite frankly, the Sanjian outperforms the Sony when it comes to listening to HD. For example, 98.7 in Washington, D.C. on the Sanjian comes in pretty well. I get the regular FM, which flips into HD1. And also, I get the HD2 Classic Country from 98.7. I can't get that on the Sony. While on the Sony, the FM stereo signal is quite good and quiet, but the HD signal is nowhere to be found. Where the Sony shines is on just pure DX. If you want to use one of these tuners as a DX tuner, then I would suggest using the Sony. Its adjacent channel rejection is some of the best I've ever seen. What I'm going to show you next is 105.9 from Alexandria, Virginia, first on the Sanjian, then on the Sony. Here in Baltimore, we have a strong HD on 105.7, which carries regular FM, HD1, and HD2 and 3 signals. So here's 105.9, first on the Sanjian, then on the Sony.
Listening to a special True Oldies presentation starring songs with colors in the title. It's the True Oldies channel Color My World Weekend.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Now here's 105.9 with the Sony tuner. You'll notice that the audio goes in and out of stereo just a little bit.
Weekend long. Listen for songs with colors in the title.
Red, yellow, yellow.
How many can you think of? We got them all on the Color My World Weekend from the True Oldies Channel.
In my location, 106.5 in Baltimore puts in quite a strong signal. It's a CBS O&O with HD1, HD2, and HD3. Here's what 106.7 sounds like on the Sanjian, and then I'll show you what it sounds like on the Sony. Sanjian? Now let's hear 106.7 on the Sony.
To find all the new free HD stations in your area, check your local station guide online at hdradio.com. If you don't have an HD radio, you're not hearing HD radio. It's time to upgrade.
Nate, technician for Safelite Auto Glass.
My customer had a tiny chip in his windshield. Yesterday, he got in his hot car, cranked up the AC, and crack. It spread. They'll need called Safelite sooner. When a chip's small, we can usually repair it in just a half hour.
My final comparison of these two tuners, I'm going to reverse the order just so you can hear the difference. We first start with the Sony on 92.5 from Winchester, Virginia. We switch from the Sony to the Sanjian, and you will hear the difference in signal quality. Here's the Sony.
Part one, identify it went, I feel safest of all. And part two of this weekend's Backtracks Lost 80s lyric, will you visit me, please? And your answer, the year was 1980. The artist, Gary Newman, and the song, Cars.
There you have both tuners dealing with adjacent channel HD hash I think you can see that the Sony tends to do that much better than the Sanjian. Well, how do these tuners perform when you're in the clear and there's nothing around you and you've got a weak FM signal? I must say that the Sony actually does a bit better, but part of that could be because of its low noise floor. The hash from the FM white noise is much lower on the Sony than it is the Sanjian, and it tends to pick up more FM signal. But again, the Sanjian does outperform it on HD, so it all depends on what you want. A really good HD tuner or a really good FM DX tuner. Let's talk about the AM for just a little bit. At my current location here in Baltimore, I get a lot of noise from computers. I guess maybe somebody close to me has a computer. I'm not so sure what it is, but it's hard to pick up good AM here, especially distant AM. But I will say this, I've seen both of these radios in the clear, and the Sony is a lot quieter on AM than the Sanjian is. The Sanjian picks up a lot of noise from the radio itself. But the Sanjian appears to have some sort of synchronous detection system in it for picking up regular AM signals, because the audio fidelity is quite good when listening to standard AM. Both tuners do quite well on HD AM. When one picks up an HD signal, the other will do the same. And actually, when one picks up an AM signal, the other one sort of does it. It's just that sometimes it disappears in the hash with the Sanjian. Let's listen to AM 1090 WBAL from Baltimore, first on the Sanjian, then on the Sony. WBAL does not broadcast in HD.
This message brought to you by Campaign for Our Children. For more information, visit CFOC.org.
This is Ann Kramer in the WBAL newsroom. Anne Arundel County police officer shot and killed a man who was holding a box cutter inside a Severn business this afternoon. Police say they ordered the man to drop the weapon, and when he didn't comply, they shot him.
Now here's WBAL AM from the Sony.
Call 410-663-4199. MHIC number 22327.
It's 4:35 once again. Time for Detour Dave Sandler on WBAL. David, how's it looking?
Well, Bruce, on that interloop side, we've been talking about the closure of the Curtis Creek drawbridge, and it's going to be that way.
Next, I want to show you a weak station, first on the Sanjian and then on the Sony. This station puts in only a marginal signal on just about any radio here. AM 1210 WPHT Philadelphia. First the Sanjian, then the Sony.
Every year, over 40 million people suffer with a chronic disfiguring fungal infection called onychomycosis. You know it, it's toenail fungus.
Finally, just so you get a taste of what AMHD sounds like, there are two AMHDs in Baltimore. One is Black Talk, one is Black Gospel. So I'm going to show you first a little bit of talk on HD, and then I'm going to show you a little bit of gospel.
Commercial is sponsored by FeedThePig.org, an organization devoted to helping you save money. We will not entice you with messages like
lowest prices in town, dealer approved, certified pre-owned,
no obligation consultation,
nor will we brag about our
huge selection.
Our first station was WOLB AM 1010 in Baltimore, and the second was WWIN 1400, and you notice that it went from mono AM to mono HD, but I wanted you to hear just a little bit of those two. Well, there's my review of the two HD tuners, the Sanjian HD-T1 and the Sony XDR-F1HD. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Cerro Talk. Visit us at www.cerrotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerrotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.